Hey friends, welcome to the Everyday Mealmanship Podcast. My name is Ty Evans, and today I got a special guest for y'all. This is my good buddy, Jim Huggard. Thanks for coming on the podcast today, Jim.
Glad to be here, Ty.
So, Jim and I have been friends for a long time. We're going to get to that, talking about how we met and everything, because I don't even know. So Jim's going to tell me something I don't know today. But Jim is a good mule man, saddle maker. He drives mules. He's a cowboy poet. This guy can do it all. So I'm glad to have him here on the podcast today. So Jim, why don't you just start by introducing yourself? There's a lot of listeners here that know you. You go down to, what's that called?
Caballo del Sol.
Yeah, so we got our Arizona ladies here that might know you. But for those that don't know you, why don't you introduce yourself and whatever you'd like to say, Jim.
Well, I've just been involved with horses and mules pretty much my whole life. What got me into mules, I guess, was my brother. I've married my high school sweetheart when we dated in high school, and much like you, Ty, we were young when we got married, and coming up on 48 years.
Wow.
And still enjoy the heck out of it. When I married my wife, she had her own horse, and I thought that was pretty cool to marry a gal that had a horse, and she knew how to ride, and she enjoyed packing and going places with me, but seemed like sometimes we always give her a rough horse and we wasn't quite into mules. But she's the one that got me into driving. Her dad had a pony cart and a pony when she was a child, and they still had that pony cart when we got married. Her brother had it. Her family had sold the farm when her father got in poor health, and her brother took the pony cart, and I got to see her in that pony cart driving it when we were, actually even after we were married. So that's why she got us into driving in the 90s, because, of course, one of my mentors, Mel Anderson, he was into driving and grew up working teams anyway, so that's how we got to where we like to drive. Is that was a product of my wife, and so we like to have a team around and to be able to hitch up. I got into saddle making because I'd look around at some of the gear that I really aspired to have, and I just flat couldn't afford it. So I got friends with people that were saddle makers and good craftsmen, and I got rubbing shoulders with them, hanging out in their shops, and then finally began to make my own stuff. And it was really a gradual learning curve for me, still learning. One of the smartest things I ever did for saddle making was join the Colorado Saddle Makers Association. That's a group of people of some of the most premier saddle makers in the West. Burns Saddlery down here, Matt Wanner, that works for Burns, he puts on some of those. Shane Dieter Saddlery in La Salle, Utah, is one of the finest saddle makers and boot makers. I'll throw a plug for Gordon Andrus, lives here in Utah, one of the finest saddle makers. He's built a lot of really premium saddles. Wrote 3 books on the subject. I've took classes from Gordon. He's helped me a lot. And so through the Colorado Saddle Makers Association, I've got to rub shoulders with people like those gentlemen. Bob Clend is another premium saddle maker. And what I like about Bob is Bob's in his 80s now, and I've took several classes from Bob through the Colorado Saddle Makers. And Bob had his upbringing was, he worked as a cowboy for Cunningham Ranches down in the book cliffs. And so he was down there in the early 50s working for Cunningham's before he became a saddle maker. And he had a shop down, I think, in Prescott or Wickenburg, and then he ultimately ended up to Meeker, Colorado, up near where his cowboy life began. And so anyway, that's been a real blessing to me to be mentored by people that I admire.
You build some good gear. So those of you listening right now, I am sitting here in Jim's leather shop, and it is really cool. He's got a saddle spread out here that he's building for our friend Lyman Miller, and yep. Boy, that's some nice stuff sitting here. Good tooling, beautiful carving, gorgeous stuff, and Jim does dang good work. He just fit me up with a nice pair of chaps. Excited to get these. We made a deal, and I was supposed to have them this fall, and then I didn't reckon Jim would get done that quick, but I was on my way and gone by the time he got them done. But they're pretty dang nice. So Jim, you did good work, and it takes a lot of talent, a lot of work, a lot of practice. Just kind of like the mulemanship. You gotta work at this stuff. That you know, you mentioned books and these people that taught you. You know, this leather work, just like the mules, though, if you don't get out and do it, you're never going to get it. You're never going to get it unless you do it yourself.
Well, that's a fact, and nobody can do it for you.
Nope.
I was thinking the other day, we were riding down with your father-in-law, Larry Pincock, and others down to Bryce Canyon area last week, and I got a mule out here that I just have never finished, and I got split off the group because she was acting up, so I decided to get her off by herself to where she'd start paying attention to me. And I was thinking about I was by myself for the rest of the ride. I went back to the truck myself. It was a couple of hours. And I was working with getting her to go down a little rock slope, and she was just not wanting to do it. She had the ability to do it, but she didn't know she had the ability. So I had to see if I was smart enough to help her learn that. And ultimately, I wasn't. So we've got a lot of work to do. I got her down and back up it mm-hmm. a different way. And then when I turned to take her back down the way I originally wanted to go, she still refused. And we worked for a while. And I'm pretty patient, and I'm also persistent, but unfortunately, she won that one. So
you're not patient and persistent enough, huh?
Yeah. So, well, I thought I would be too late getting back to the truck, and I didn't want to hold things up.
That time will always get you on it.
Yep. So sometimes with mules, and I thought about the it's kind of a metaphor, but what they've taught me more than I've ever taught them. Mm-hmm. It's just a blessing to be around them. And she's a good mule, and normally she's just willing. But right then she says, no, I'm not going to do this exactly like you want.
Which mule is this you're talking about?
That Tilly mule.
Tilly?
Yeah. She's mm-hmm. just,
we've had some adventures with Tilly in the past too. There's some stories there with old Tilly, huh?
Yep. She got hurt when we was packed in over to Colorado when I tipped her over in that creek. And so she didn't feel good for several years.
Yep.
And she was hurt. And I've just started working again with her this year. And she's got a little age on her now and a lot of strength.
Yep.
And but she's got a real good demeanor, soft eye, calm, easy to be around, easy to shoe. And I like that.
Yeah.
I can handle her, and I do my own shoeing, so it's important that she's easy.
Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, so usually on these podcasts, I would tell everybody how we met, but I don't know how we met because I was a child. So why don't you tell them how we met, since I don't know.
Well, I might could shed some light there. Your dad, Dion, Dion Evans and I go way back. Dion was in the Mule Club. I think he was even the president of the Mule Club, the Rocky Mountain Mule Association that's based here in Utah. And I joined that club just to ride with other people that were like-minded. Now, mules are awfully popular today. A good mule is worth a lot, but when we first started muling, as I call it, back in the early 80s, there just wasn't that many people using mules, especially for saddle stock. Mm-hmm. And they mostly used them for pack strings. And very few people would ever jerk a pack string riding a mule. And we do it all the time now. Don't think nothing of it. Mm-hmm. And there's still a few people that prefer to ride a horse, and I get that. But anyway, back to how we met, is we joined that club and started riding, and then there's your dad. And your dad was, dad's kind of an old school cowboy. He gets it done, but I recognized that Dion was a lot of fun to be around, a good hand with the horse, a good hand with the mule, and a good dad. And he brought his children on those rides, and that's where we met. I remember being down the Valley of Fire. The different people would sponsor a ride every month, and my friend John Wallenzeen and I would sponsor that ride down to the Valley of Fire. And we'd had your father-in-law, Larry, come down, and of course he brought his kids, and they lived nearby us, so I knew Larry well. And I remember when you and Skye would play up in the rocks and be up there hidden from us, and we'd see you look up over the red rocks, and we'd, hey, there's Skye and Ty up there.
Well, that'd drive Larry crazy, even though he was just kids. It'd drive him crazy.
You're little kids. And I thought, yeah, I had a picture of that somewhere, but I couldn't find it. But anyway, that's how we met. It's through your dad being in a mule club. And mules, I guess, is what brought us together. I think that's how you meet a lot of people, though, yep, now, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, most folks I know, most friends outside of church would be through mules, you know.
But
yeah, my old man, he took us everywhere. All of us boys and my sister, he'd take us everywhere. Every weekend we were riding or camping or doing something. But yeah, I'm glad you told me that, because, you know, as far back as I can remember, I've just known Jim Huggard. It was just, you just, a guy that's been part of my life, my whole life, you know. So anyways, now I know.
One thing I always liked about your dad, and I took it from him, but he would say, hey, Jim, what are we doing? Well, we're riding our mules. He says, no, he says, what we're doing, Jim, is we're making memories.
Yep. He'd say that all the time. He still does. Yep.
Does he?
Yep.
Yep. So I think that's important.
He would holler out, we're making memories.
Yep. Yep. We're making memories.
Yeah, we did too. We made a lot of them.
And he was a dang good cook too.
Yeah, you know, if you're a good cook, you can make friends pretty easy. My dad's been a good cook, and he's got a lot of friends.
Yep. Yeah, he is.
Anybody that cooks always gets invited places.
Yep. Yeah, Yeah, he's a good hand around the cook stove too. So yeah, that's where our life together began.
All right.
Way back then.
So let's go way back further yet to when you got into mules. You mentioned this to me earlier, and we kind of said, oh, hold up, let's save that for the podcast. So tell me about your journey of getting into this whole mule business.
Well, my brother called me one day, and he says, hey, I've got a new mule. We went, him and his business partner went back to Tennessee and bought this Tennessee walking mule. And they called her Bambi. And she was a young mule. And he says, let's go ride. And we went out on the West Desert. What was the West Desert then? It's all houses now. Out there were Eagle Mountain is.
Yep.
That was all just sagebrush. And
mm-hmm.
we went out there riding. We used to call it Tickville.
Yeah.
And we went out there to ride, and he brought this mule. And he says, and we run our mules and horses together, or horses together. And he says, I'm actually partners with Glenn on this mule, but I'm going to bring it up and turn it out with the horses. I says, gosh, we're not having mules there. We don't, that thing's ugly. We don't need that thing. And he says, no, he says, you don't get it. And he was right. I didn't get it. So then we packed into the Bookcliffs, and I was cleaning up breakfast, and I looked over, and they'd put my saddle on this mule. And they said, hey, you're going to ride a mule today. I says, no, I'm not. I says, we've saddled it, and you're going to ride it. You just need to try it. And I says, okay, I'll try it. So they made sure we got into some real rough country. We got off the trail and got going through downfall and over some little jumps. And they says, we got back to camp. They says, okay, now tell us how that mule ride was for you. And we talked about it as we rode. But anyway, after that, I guess I was converted. That mule just went through all that rough country. And so it wasn't long before we had quite a few mules. And then it wasn't too many more years and we actually bought a Jack.
Mm-hmm.
And we had that Jack about 20 years. And we ended up with a bunch of different mares. The market said that gated mules was the ones that sold. And our Jack wasn't gated, but he threw a good disposition. And I've still got some mules out here that were sired by that old Jack. The oldest mules would be in their 20s, well into their 20s. And the youngest one we got out here, I think, is 8. And anyway, we never did really raise. I've had a couple of mules that racked as when they were born, as babies. But as they progressed, I never could get it back out of them, even though I know it's there. Have you ever heard of that?
Oh yeah, racking, your running walk, those things got to be developed.
Yeah,
it takes a lot of work. Some of them have it a little bit more natural, but anyways.
Well, the other side of that, you get. You know, we had walking horses too. You know, we started out with quarter horses, but because of the mule thing, we got into walkers. And one of my mentors building saddles and mules would be Clyde Edwards. And Clyde evolved too. When I first met Clyde, he had Arabian horses and had won several shows, but Clyde ended up with a lot of trophies from Mule Days. And he had a...
Bishop Mule Days?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
A ton of trophies. Yeah, he's won gated classes.
And, okay, yep. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. He had a pack string of mules in the Rose Parade. He's been on the cover of Western Mule. He wrote articles for Mule magazines. And, yeah, a real interesting man and a real good friend. And I learned a lot about the mules from Clyde, and I learned a lot about saddle making. But Clyde told me, he says, I don't know why you're, even though he showed in gated classes at Mule Days, he says that the jackass has a natural gait,
yep.
a natural shuffle. And he says a lot of times that's more desirable than a run and walk. And the mules I have out here now, they're both out of quarter horse mares, the best mule I've ever had. And he steps out nice. He's out of a Joe Hancock bred quarter horse mare. And he's an old foundation type quarter horse. Now that mule's 20 years old this year. And he can still travel with about anybody. And I've worked worked cows on him. And
talking about, is that Oscar you're talking
yeah,
about?
that's old Oscar, and that's a picture of him over there on the wall herding cows.
Yeah, Jim's got pictures of mules and all sorts of adventures here on these walls. I wish I had a little video. Maybe I'll take a video before I leave, but pretty cool stuff here.
Oh, it's just stuff we've gathered up that we've done over the years, but so driving's been a big thing for us. We've got several wagons, and that's been a real blessing to be able to drive mules and take people with us. We had some friends here from Hawaii that. And the one guy, he was born in Illinois and raised on a farm and been around livestock and whatnot. And we had him here to our farm in August. They were here. And we fed him lunch and then took him out and hitched the team and took him on a wagon ride. And it's just something you can do with a small child, a baby in arms, or you can do it with a great grandmother that still needs a cane if you can get her up the step and in the buggy. So that's what driving does for you. And I personally, I think the best mules that I've ever had are ones that drive and pack and ride. If they can do all three things, and do them well, I think driving sometimes takes away. Sometimes we get on their mouth a little more than we want, and I think it can harden them up a little bit.
But the versatility is good, though. And I don't do much driving. Well, I don't do any driving unless I'm hanging out with you or some other friends, But that versatility is something that I feel like has faded away from a lot of equine culture just across the board. Well, you got to have this horse for. If you're gonna work cows, you gotta have this horse. If you're gonna, you're gonna go compete and run barrels or something, and the versatility is kind of fading out. So, you're right. A mule that can ride and can pack and can drive, that's a pretty valuable critter.
It is. And you go to some of these sales, those are the mills that are bringing the bigger money. The ones that have that. If you can stand behind a mule and hitch it up and have it just, I like it when they'll step over when you ask them to. Or if you give them a little bump, they learn. They learn voice commands just like riding. And ultimately, that's what we want. So if I can drive them and get them to stop without pulling on their mouse, that's ultimately what I'm after. If I can just get them to do it by voice, that to me, that's the ultimate. If I can get them to G right or haw left, and without picking the lines up, and then if I do pick the lines up, make sure that I'm still talking to them so they have the correlation between the word and what the line's reinforcing. So, yeah, it's a big deal. But we picked up a team of mules down in Texas, and I don't know. We got them home, and they're just a little hotter than what I thought they'd be.
You're talking about your team you have out here now.
That I haven't drove yet. I've never drove them. We bought them last June, and here it is November. I still haven't hitched them. But I needed a couple of pack mules. I had a hunter coming out and from Michigan to hunt back here, up here behind Nebo. And my wife says, I really don't want you using my little team pack. And she says, you're going to have to use them other two mules. And I thought, well, they haven't even packed. They've never packed. The fact is, the one's never been ridden. They've never even had a saddle on it. When I bought it, I asked the guy if they had ever rode it. He says, no, but I got a guy coming over and I'll have him ride it. And he put the saddle on, and that mule didn't know a thing about it.
Oh, yeah, you told me about that. He just sat there for a minute and then just kind of sulked up a little.
It was crazy. I've never seen anything like it. I didn't think a mule could be around that long, but I guess they were Amish raised mules and just been used for work, you know, and they're scared to death of the four wheelers and the tractor and everything else. They haven't been around it, but I brought them out here and I tied them both to the hitch rail. They like to be together. They're terrible that way. And I took them and packed them here at the house. And ultimately, I packed my gear into this camp with them. And I had another mule in the string that had packed, and I put her on the lead and put them two at the back. And it took them a while to line out, but I told my wife, I says, you know, they're mules. I think they'll handle it. We just take it slow and easy. And before the trip was over, they were behaving good on the high line in camp. The one I left hobbled up, he's sitting pod, and I hobbled him up on his legs and let him learn not to paw a little bit, and he done pretty good. And when the guy shot a nice 6-point bull elk, and I packed a lot of elk, done a lot of hunting and guiding over my lifetime, and done a lot of packing. And anyway, I quartered that elk up and took it away from the kill spot. And then a trick I learned from an old guy, you can put a little Vicks vapor rub near the nostrils of a mule so he doesn't smell the blood. And that's just a trick you can do. But anyway, ultimately those mules had never packed, never been ridden, ended up being pretty good pack mules and packed out elk all in one trip.
There you go.
So see, their value went up right then.
Yeah.
So in my mind, that might not be valuable to somebody, but it is to me.
Yeah.
So now I know that I've got a set of mules out there that I could probably pack.
So how are you going to introduce these mules to driving again here? What are you going to do to prepare them? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I've harnessed them up out here, and they're quiet to harness. They understand that. You can tell that they've been acclimated to that and desensitized to that. Desensitized the collar and the harness around their butts and all the straps, the quarter straps. I've had mules that'll cow kick you when you go to hook them them quarter straps up. You'll be down right down by its side, and they'll...
And these ones didn't bother you, so that's good.
You pull that quarter strap across their flank and under to the belly band, and they that's a little goosey, you know. Mm-hmm. These mules are good that way. I don't think I'd be a bit scared to hook them up. I've just got to find the time, and when I do, I'll start them out in the arena, where I have a confined area. But I'll ground drive them. I'll have them together and drive them. I've actually, the one that I want to make a saddle mule out of it, I've had it in the round corral with the saddle, and I've been doing all the groundwork with it. And I've stepped up on the saddle, and she don't care. I think they'll be fine.
Good.
I hope it turns out that way. So you'll know if it don't.
Well, yeah. I like to do it right the first time, and, you know, I like to make it as successful as I can, and I imagine it's the same thing with the driving, you know. My world is obviously the riding world, making bridle mules, but imagine it's the same thing when you're driving them. You want it to be successful, so it's not a, you know,
yep,
not a miserable thing for them to pull something around.
No, and I think they enjoy it. You know, you go out and hitch a team up, and I think they actually enjoy getting out and doing that.
I think the team, you know, driving as a team, is really good for them too. You know, they're herd animals and they like to be with another one. So driving with a team probably a little. Is it easier to teach him as a, in teams rather than driving singles? Or do you like to drive him single first?
No, I've never drove one single that I haven't drove double.
Okay.
I ground drive them single and do much the same that way, but
So will you hitch them up both these two together, or will you hitch one with maybe, because you got a lot of good mules here that can drive plenty good. Will you hitch them with something that will drive good?
nope, I won't get them out of their comfort zone from their buddy. I'll hitch them together.
Because these two you're talking about, they're pretty mothered up to each other.
They
They
are, and
they're best pals, huh?
I'll leave them together. I think I was showing you when you was over here in the summer that tongue I welded up, that I can actually put an unbroke mule in the middle of two broke mules, and that's a good way to start them. I've started several teams for people over my life, and I'm kind of self-taught that way, and I would picking up tips from people that did drive. Of course, Mel Anderson, who's huge influence on my life, he always drove single. He says, "I don't know why you think you need a team." And Clyde Edwards, who was the other equal influence on me, he built a chuck wagon that was pretty much historically correct with a pup on the back, and he was happiest when he had a six up on it, when two mules could have pulled that easy. I've helped Clyde with in parades, and Clyde's been in wagon trains with that, and anyway, that's two differences of opinion coming from two different places,
Yeah, it's just.
and then I'm somewhere in the middle, and I've never drove a six up. We've done four up, and that's a handful.
No, it's all a handful to me. I've spent my whole life making bridle mules, and then, I can handle. It's funny. You could put me in a string. I could handle 5 or 6 pack mules, but when I was over here and you was having me help you hitch up just two of them, all them straps and things, boy, for a fellow like me that's really unfamiliar, that was like, wow, this is a lot of stuff. Where I can go pull a pack string in it. I don't blink twice at it. But all that driving. So yeah, everybody's got their thing, right? Everybody likes.
Yeah.
I would like to. Jim here, he has invited me to come over this winter, now that I'm off of my clinic tour, to come hang out and learn more about driving. I'd like to do that because I think it's, well, you know me, I like to learn.
Oh
I've
yeah.
always liked to learn something else.
I think you should learn to drive. It'll be fun. And you driving to you will just be natural because you've been around it all your life, and it's not a whole lot different than riding. It's like packing. You need to know. We get into pretty good discussions sometimes, and we get at the trailhead. And are you going to throw a double diamond there or a single diamond, and or an Arizona box hitch, or but it depends on what it is. If we're going to pack 50-gallon drums, we're going to use a barrel hitch. If we're going to pack bales of hay, we'll use a barrel hitch. If we're going to stand wall tents up straight up, we're going to use a squaw hitch. So with a bird's foot maybe, and so I think it's important to know the different things, and I think like packing, driving's just another one of those things, just another avenue. And it one thing I've enjoyed with driving is I don't have a ton of time to spend with the animals as I'd like. I mean, that's your life, your business. You get to do that every day, and I don't do it every day, and should do more with it. But I can hitch that team up, and I can tie four other critters to the back of that wagon and take them down the road with me.
You can get all your work done in an hour
Well, and
or two.
that's how I ultimately, if I had a 2-year-old or 3-year-old I was starting, that's exactly what I'd do with it. I'd just take it on the back of that wagon, with the team and let it get used to the sights and the sounds. And once I seen it was comfortable with that and just coming along easy, then I could either put a pack saddle on it or I could put a harness on it and then bring it along.
Yep.
And then I might tie it up to a little more to the front and just let it get used to that and just get it desensitized to the sights and the sounds and the smells of all that that's going on.
Boy, and there's lots to see out there too. You know,
Yep.
I realized that when we came out here, you know, we brought Ellie and Swayze out here and we went for a little wagon ride around town here. Jim's from Levan, Utah here. And anyway, Jim took us out here and, well, you got dogs running out and you got kids running out and you got bikes, you got four-wheelers, you got these side-by-sides, you got, gosh, you got a lot of stuff. So, and that's something that, you know, the type of riding I do, you know, my mules get exposure basically in two places. They get exposure, you know, a lot of stuff on the mountain and, you know, working with cattle and things like that, packing and riding, or at clinics. But I can't tell you the last time I just rode around town, you know, and
yeah.
So boy, just taking these mules out around town, that's quite an adventure.
It is.
That fella roping that dummy.
Yeah.
Remember that? Those mules, they sure didn't know what to think about that, huh?
No, the dummy had them tripped up.
Yep. What is that?
Yep. Well, when we hitched up week before last, we stopped by that same guy's place, and he was out there again. And they did a lot better.
Good.
And then we had him actually get his little girl, and he come and got on the wagon with us.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, so, and then we talked to him a little bit about what we were doing, and he's a horseman. He has some real nice blue Valentine horses. They run about 200 mother cows, and you know these guys are excellent ranch ropers and excellent cowmen. I guess that's what you get if you're out there practicing on your front lawn with a dummy.
Yeah,
but
yeah, I wish I had time to rope more. That's something that I don't get enough
enough
chance to do.
And that's what all my mules need to learn is to. I roped off old Oscar and he hates it.
You know, that kind of brings me up to the next thing that I wanted to talk about here, and I didn't write it down there, but just thinking, you know, among our friends that you and I associate with, Jim and I have a lot of common friends, you know, but you're one of the only ones like me that really appreciate this great basin style of horsemanship and this buckaroo tradition. You know, Jim just lives over the hill for me. It's only 13 miles to my house, but we got to go around the mountain though. But we live on what they call the Buckaroo Fringe, which is the Wasatch Range here. We're on the edge of the Great Basin. And anyways, something I've always appreciated about Jim, and he was one of these fellows that actually really introduced me to this stuff, is this buckaroo style of lifestyle, right? It's a lifestyle. It's some cool stuff. So maybe talk about that in a little bit.
Well, I don't know. I've never made a real bridle horse or a real bridle mule like you have. Got a hackamore, got one out in the tack room, and been read quite a few books and watched videos, but I haven't had a real first-hand influence other than just what I seem to be drawn to. And I really like a good handle on an animal and appreciate that. That's what I admire about you, and I admire about your father-in-law, Larry. He just has a real gift and skill set to be able to put a handle on an animal. Now, when you get out and cut cows, and you know, this time of year, I could have went and worked cows today. Had a couple of guys in here yesterday that was looking at some shaps and invited me to go with them. Last week I could have went 3 days out So this time of year, they're always looking for an extra hand. And I do go out and day work just for fun, not for money, just to help these guys out and spend a lot of time. And when I go with them, they're usually just gathering. They're bringing their animals off the mountain, and it's not a lot of cowboying. When I first went out here with Harper's, they owned about 16,000-17,000 across their freeway out here,
Wow,
acres.
that's a lot of cows.
Yeah, and they run, well, not that many cows, acres,
Oh, acres.
deeded acres.
Okay.
And they run a couple of hundred head of mother cows. And when you know they when you go out and work with them, you're just going out to gather. And when I first showed up out there on a mule, they kind of thumbed their nose. And anyway,
Yep.
when at the end of the day, when you get the work done, now they call you up and beg you to come because they appreciate what a mule can do out there.
Yeah, I found that. I got a few buddies that say, you know, hey Ty, we don't like riding down in that wash, but there's some cows down there. You go take your meal down there. So I get that. That's
Yeah, they'll give you a canyon to
yep.
drive, but
Yep.
these guys don't. When they bring them into brand, they're running them in a tub and corrals, and they're separating the calves from the mothers, and they've got them all balling on the outside of that corral in the tub, and they're doing most of their work on foot. There are a few places here in town that have kind of gravitated to the buckaroo method, and they're working them with guys that can rope. And I would like to get involved more with those guys. And
Yeah. It's interesting seeing that it's kind of a, I'd say the last decade has been a little bit of a revival or a, what do you call it, a renaissance of,
Yep.
because it seems like, you know, a lot of these traditions, a lot of these ways of handling livestock and working with horses and mules was lost during the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, somebody, it's funny, somebody will call like, well, like a fellow that maybe is a little rougher, a little bit in a hurry, or a little bit more ram jam with mules. They'll say he's old school. When really, if anybody's old school, it'll be a fellow like me. You know, the stuff I do is ancient, right? It's
Yeah, it is.
but it's because of the Renaissance style of it. They say, oh well, that's some new stuff. It ain't new. Nothing new about it. And same thing with working with cattle and handling that. Is we got in a hurry after the, you know, the Industrial Revolution. We get in a hurry. We got to process more. We got to be quicker, and it's harder on the cattle. And it might save them time, but they might lose a little money. And so some of these older traditions are much quieter and easier on the livestock.
Absolutely. Yep.
So.
Yeah, when you talk about old school, you t talk about like a warrior on a horse or a medieval guy that would go to battle on a horse. Well, that horse would be push button.
Gotta be,
It'd be
gotta be
working
with them.
off their leg
Yep.
and voice, and because they've got weapons in their hands. And so that's where they trace the vaquero horsemanship too,
Oh yeah.
is to Europe and the Spanish and others that that's where they made bridle
Yep.
horses. Yep.
So. Well, we've talked a little bit about your driving, and we've talked a little bit about your saddle, your leather work, and whatnot. But what I'd, Jim is full of stories. This guy is one of the best storytellers I know. But you got any either or both? Maybe a good your worst wreck you've ever been in. Maybe what we could learn from that, or maybe the funniest story. Maybe those two go together. Maybe they're separate. I don't know. What do you? You got any stories you want to share for these folks on here?
Well, they say that mistakes give you experience, and experience gives you wisdom. And I've had plenty of good wrecks, and usually they're all attributed to just breaking the rules. And that's
that's that, true.
That's usually what it comes down to. But I always think of one rack, and I told this story the other night at, while we were camped out down in southern Utah. We were talking about racks, and first of all, the first rule I broke was I took these this string up a trail that I've never took a pack string up, and there was an alternate route to go, and this other way was a little faster, and I knew the string could handle it because they ride rough country, and the alternate route to go is not that much better, but it there's this one place you have to jump up a rock on the way I chose to go, and it's a trail that nobody used. It's a trail they used to salt their cattle with, and it's not the main trail. Nobody even knows about the trail, but we had spent some time and cleaned it up, and I thought, you know what, I'll just pop up out of this canyon on this new on this old salt trail that we had just newly renovated. So that was the first thing I did wrong, is I should have went out the main trail that everybody rides out. The second thing I did wrong is I tied off hard and fast.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. So, but they're good seasoned mules, except one.
That's how it always goes, right? No, yep. They're good. We'll be fine.
We'll be fine. Yep. And then the third element to this is I had two hunters that were not riders at all, and I had them on, and I had my partner there to help me, John, and these guys were on just literally kid mules. Anybody could ride them. You could put a three-year-old on these mules these guys were on, and all they had to do is be behind my pack string. I think I had five mules strung together hard and fast, and I was riding a little walking mare, little Tennessee Walker, little jet black mare. Nobody had ever rode that horse but me, and she was a handful. She was a little horse, but boy, she could travel. And I enjoyed riding her. But anyway, I got her up on up to this jump rock, and I got her up over this rock. But this young mule I had at the first of the string, and that's where I always put the colts. And I didn't have much on him. And he couldn't make that jump up over that rock. And he hung back, and I couldn't get that black horse stopped fast enough. Just not. And anyway, he flipped over, and it's a real steep side hill down the hill. And when he flipped over, he went over backwards and drug that string down that hillside. Well, the first thing they did is they went through a ground nest of yellow jackets.
Oh no, this just gets better.
Oh yeah, it was good.
Oh no.
Anyway, I thought I killed it. They rolled down the hill and a tree stopped him, and I've got the tree literally split the pack string in two, still tied hard and fast. And the first rule of packing in my mind is you always have a sharp knife. Mm-hmm. And I keep a sharp knife right on my shaft belt, and I ended up cutting a lead rope on just one mule, I think. And anyway, those guys that were left behind up there, they got stung with the bees, the hunters.
They got it, huh?
Yeah, so they got it. And I didn't get stung. They was coming up and hitting my hat, but I was more concerned about the pack string and got down to them, and they got stung, some of them. And so it added insult to injury. But it took 2 hours to clean that mess up. So at least. And I literally thought I'd broke the neck of one mule, and how she got out of that. And she was a little red mule. I had two little red mules, and they were both a driving team that I also packed and also rode. Those mules could do it all. But I thought I'd killed one of them. But it ended up I didn't. But that was probably one of the better wrecks I've ever had. And
yeah, that sounds wild.
So I got them all I got them all strung back together, and my buddy that was helping me, John, we were in that together. John was riding this gated mule he had, and it was a foxtrotter mule. This thing, the only reason he kept it was the most cold back mule I've ever seen. But this thing would buck about every time you got on it. But he liked it because it could travel about 10, 11 miles an hour in the flat. And so, anyway, I got that string all gathered back up, got it, John and I did, got them repacked. Well, the two hunters just sat there on the log and basically watched us. They were upset. They thought they'd had a near-death experience, and to us it was another day at work. And I got them all strung back together, and this time I put breakaways on them.
Okay, we got one lesson learned.
Yep. So I no sooner get them strung together, and John walks over and he says, I've got them all strung. The lead mule's tied to a tree. I've got everything strung back up. Everything's packed. Got them strung up. And John grabs the lead rope. I get on my little black mare. And I've got her standing there quiet. I says, yeah, just bring me that string over, John, and we'll get going. I says, I'll just circle them here and keep them going in a circle. Will you get on Smoker? That was the mule that, the Foxtrotter mule that was cold backed. Anyway, he says, all right. So he gets the two hunters on their mounts. I'm circling the string. Everybody's set. We're all set, ready to go. He goes over there, and John rode saddle broncs as a kid, and he can ride anything. I've never seen him bucked off, and I've rode with him for 35 years. Wow. He can flat ride. He just gets in rhythm with him and just goes. Anyway, Smoker ducked her head and went to hogging it, and she bucked right through that string.
Oh, no.
And this time I had breakaways on.
Yeah, there you go.
And they broke away. So now they're running all over.
They're scattered.
Yeah, so now we was another hour or so getting that gathered up. But that's probably one of my most memorable wrecks. But
well, that's a twofer.
Yeah, that was a good one. Yeah, but so talking about different mules, gated mules versus, I want to speak to this if I can. Because mm-hmm. we stood that jack for that all them years, and we tried to... We bred the Morgan mares, gated Morgan mares that a guy there in Highland had. We bred the walking mares, foxtrotter mares, quarter horse mares, grade mares. I think we even bred like an Arabian cross mare. But what I found out, and we've had a couple of gated mules that we've actually bought. We didn't ever raise any that finished out gated, but the country we ride in, I don't think gate makes anything, in just my opinion. Unless you're riding out here down the road, going from one end of my farm to the other. I just wondered what your thoughts were there.
Oh, well, you're right on. It just depends on where you're at. Jim and I here, we're right in the middle of the Rocky Mountains, and we got, I mean, just out his back door here, there's some big cliffs and ledges over there and a lot of rough country where you're not going to, it doesn't really do you any good to have something that's going to walk out that fast because you ain't going fast.
Yep.
It's not beneficial. Now, you know, I travel all over the world doing these clinics, you know, and yeah, I got friends that live in Kansas and Missouri and, Nebraska and Oklahoma where, it's pretty flat. And so, you know, their trail ride, I mean, they might do 30 miles today where you and I might ride all day long and go 8.
Yeah.
You know, that's the difference. It's just the terrain. So, yeah, it's just personal preference. I will say that, the gated breeds got a little bit more sting to them. They're a little hotter. And the consequence here is a lot of people that are getting a little age on them. You know, the average age of my participant in my clinics is probably 60 to 70 years old.
Really?
Yep.
Why so, is that, do you think?
Oh, they got time. They got time and they got...
The resources.
They got the resources. That they can do it now. They've raised their kids and they're ready to spend some time on themselves. But anyways, so you get these people that are that age. I'm not... knocking anything on age because I know some dang tough people that age, but but they got some back problems, or they got hip problems or knee problems, and they're saying, I need something smoother. So the gated sounds good that way, but their ability to handle that, what comes with it, is not always there. That's where the problems come in. But no, teach their own. I mean, whatever, I got, but you're talking to a fella. I mean, I'm obviously biased. I got a pin. What do I got? I got 10 quarter horse mules, and I got one walking mule. So you can
Yeah.
see my bias there,
Is the walking mule gated?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Moves out
Yep.
good?
She got a good run and walk on her, and
Good. I'd like to see her. Have I seen her?
yeah, Chrome.
Oh yeah, Chrome. Absolutely.
So she can.
Yeah.
She can do. She's very versatile, and she's my favorite myth buster, because I get all these folks that are really into the gated stock that have that big voodoo about trotting. You can't
Yeah.
trot. Don't ever trot them. I can do anything on her. I can trot. I can lope. I can do running walk. She can do it all. So versatility, like we talked earlier, that's
Yeah.
important. But
Clyde told me that trot is a natural gait for a mule
yeah.
that they get from their dad, from the jack side. Of course, unless you're hennies, and then it's the mother side. But when you talked about back and knees and the first thing that flooded my mind was that person needs a new saddle. No, I mean really. I mean, how many saddles you've seen that the stirrups are hanging the wrong way? And if you got a, I mean, you look at these stirrup leathers, how they're contoured, they're set, and when they sit on the saddle, and see, they're even, so as they sit there, they're going to be turned perfect. And we even put a little curve in the fender that wraps around your calf, so you're not breaking them in. They're already broke in. And that, the right seat, the right set on the stirrup can make a huge difference to backs and knees. So just throw a plug there for any saddle maker, for anybody listening to this, you might consider looking up a good saddle maker.
Absolutely.
So anyway,
Let's take a quick break here, and then when we come back, we got to thank our sponsors here. And when we come back, let's talk about the saddles for just a minute. And then we got to do some cowboy poetry here. We got some good
okay.
stuff, so let's take a break here, and we'll be right back. All right, I need to thank our sponsors, Mules and More Magazine. They are fantastic. If you are not a subscriber, you need to check out Mules and More Magazine. Corey Daniels is the editor, and she does a fantastic job. I have been a longtime subscriber, many years, and I remember even as a child growing up, my dad was a subscriber. So, great magazine, and Corey gets it better and better every month. If you take a look at the October 2020 issue, you will see my sweet daughter Ellie and my cool father-in-law Larry Pincock, as well as myself, on the cover of the magazine. And in that particular issue, my good buddy Samuel Skelling, who has been here on the podcast before, he wrote a great article about Bryce Canyon Mule Days that you all need to read. So it's a good magazine. You can find them on Facebook, look up Mules More. You can find them on Instagram, look up at Mules More Magazine. And of course, you can subscribe on their website, mulesandmore.com. So thank you very much, Corey, over there at Mules and More. We appreciate your support for this podcast. All right, we're back. I'm here with my buddy Jim Huggard, and we're just about to get into talking about some saddles. Like we mentioned earlier in the podcast, Jim builds awesome saddles and gear. Like I said earlier, we're sitting here looking at the saddle he's got laid out here, and beautiful stuff. But what I wanted to talk to you about, Jim, and I've had a couple saddle makers on the podcast. We both have our good buddy Joe G. He's
Absolutely.
Joe's awesome. And
Joe
then,
does a great job.
yep. And then, do you know Jeff Pace?
I do know Jeff.
So I had good old Jeff on here. He had some fun packing stories. He's that boy. He's packed.
He's a good
He's
hand too.
done more packing than I ever will. But so they've talked a little bit about saddles and whatnot, but every one of you guys are different. So why don't you tell the folks here listening about what you like to see in a good built saddle? Maybe talk a little bit on specific saddles for mules. I mean, you can imagine the questions I get about mule bars and different equipment and the way saddles are built. So you had just, before we went to our break here, you just started talking about your the fenders you got laid out right there. He's got these fenders here that are already turned out so that they're already shaped up that way. So instead of you getting a brand new saddle having to break that sucker in, it's already set up. So Jim, why don't you take it on and tell the folks what you think?
Well, back to those stirrups and the fenders. I actually have this jig here that you can see.
Yeah, he's good. He's good.
And that's a wooden jig with a jack screw in it.
Okay.
That's what. So, if you ever rode a saddle and you ride it for a while and the one leg gets longer than the other, even
Oh,
though
yeah.
they're in different holes, that's because the leather stretch different.
Right.
And, it's very important where the leather's cut out of a hide. And when we take the back of a cowhide, when we buy leather, we use Herman Oak leather typically. And Herman Oak comes inside, so you're buying a cow. And I usually buy for a saddle, I buy one right and one left. And the first thing you cut out of them hides is at the very top is where all the strength is. And the first thing that comes out of that's your stirrup leathers. And so when you get down towards the belly, of course, the belly we just pretty much cut 6, 8 inches off, and it just pretty much goes in the garbage. So the down near the belly, that's where you'll get your gullet underneath the fork. Then your cantle can come, it's not doesn't have any real stress. You need something that's got some body and some firmness. But your the back of that seat can be down toward the belly, but the top of the seat, the front end of it, it'd be what you see looking at the saddle, your where your front jockeys are. That's up in the butt, up the top. So that's got to be cut there. So different places in the hide is where you cut. Some you need a little more give. Your swell cover comes down near to the belly because it's got to be able to wrap around that swell and fold. So you want a little give in it. And so a cow just like us around their girth, their skin's more stretchy. And then in the butt of a cow, and then up in that is where all your firm leather is. And then up in the neck is where your thickest leather is. And then we'll take that neck leather, and that's where we start our ground seat. And that's probably one of the most important things in a saddle is getting that ground seat in and getting that skived out good and getting a real good seat. Of course, everything starts with a good tree. And the guy that builds my trees, Keith Gertz, up in Midway, he's hard to get trees from, but I've actually, on several occasions, have actually taken mules to Keith's business, taken them out of the trailer, and he's brought different trees out in the wood. That means in the wood, it's the wooden tree before it's got the rawhide sewed on it. And for mule bars, they're of course don't have the twist in that a horse bar does. And he can look at that. And then one thing that Keith does that a lot of saddle makers or a lot of tree makers don't is he'll build you a different angle. It's not just the width of the gullet, it's the angle of the gullet. Typically 90 to 93 degrees. So he'll play with that, and so if you can see how the bars and the width and the angle of that gullet is all sits on the back of an animal in the wood. And if something's not right, then make the changes then. So if somebody's riding, most of us ride several mules. Like you said, you got a dozen mules over there. So you need a saddle that's going to fit a dozen different mules. And for the most part, yes. But in my mind, everybody that rides a lot, should have a custom saddle. And I had a rancher down here that rides horses and mules. And we took his horse, his favorite quarter horse. It's a real typey, blocky, foundation type quarter horse, high performance horse. These guys have a lot of nice horses. And if you went through there, they're like San Pepe's, stuff like that. Really well-bred quarter horses. But he likes to ride a mule when he herds cows sometimes. He just enjoys mules. He's got a bunch of mules. But we had him bring his favorite mule and his favorite horse, and we fit in the wood till we found something that matched as close as we could to both. And then we build him a saddle. Now that this guy's got the money and got the wherewithal to do that. But anyway, if you want a saddle that fits perfect, that's the way to do it. But then it needs to be constructed so everything's right. You start with that tree, it's a good foundation. So if your foundation's perfect and the saddle maker does his job, gets a full plug in it, has the plug run up underneath the bars so you get that support. People always want to get a lightweight saddle, and I want a lightweight saddle, but it's impossible to have a 20-pound saddle and have it be functional and for the kind of riding I do. Now I see people ride Cordura saddles or stuff like that, or man-made saddles, and that's fine. But what we're doing is tried and true for people that ride long days and enjoy treating their own self and their animal. So it ought to fit them and it ought to fit the animal.
Absolutely.
I've had people come down and get in their seat and they'll say, well, you need to take a little more off here or add here. And we can do that easy in the rough seat for a custom saddle because we just simply add more leather or take more leather away. And so anyway, that's kind of some ideas. And then you can get into skirts, square skirts, round skirts. We'll do a skirt that like this saddle here that we've got today. It's got a small round skirt at the back, and then where the rigging is, it drops down. And then so that's where you'll get your stability to hold that saddle in place. If we cut that skirt all the way straight across that, it wouldn't sit that animal as good. So we've got that stiff leather coming down another, what, 4 3 4 inches, that'll give that stability. So, but a lot of it's what people want. We can take some weight out of them. We've got a saddle in here on the rack that's where we've got the exposed rawhide on the cantle and exposed rawhide on the swell, and that does take some weight off them. It's a single rig saddle, so they'd for sure want to be riding a britching, and it's set back. That's another thing too. A lot of people that ride mules will sore them up in their elbow. And that they've bought a saddle at the feed store that's full rigged. And so they can't get that saddle to sit properly on the back behind the scallops in the shoulder. So they've got the saddle run too far forward and that cinch is too far forward and they're always soring it up. And on it for a mule, you need to be back what we call 7/8.
Yeah, that's my favorite 7/8 riggings.
Yep, 7/8, even you can even get back towards 3/4. And then if you ride a britching and you double strap that britching like we do pack saddles, do we need to?
You can grab that if you need to.
I can just shut it down.
Yep. Need to get it, you can.
Yeah, we'll get it.
All right.
So on that pack saddle, we have a strap off the britching that goes to the saddle itself that comes up off the britching itself. I'm not talking about the spider straps, I'm talking about the side quarter straps. And then I do that on a saddle. and then run one to the cinch as well, and that helps keep this the saddle back with the top strap, and it keeps the cinch back with the bottom strap. And then if you can do that and not sore your animal up in the elbow, they're a lot happier.
Oh yeah.
So, but anyway. Well,
especially some of these mules that don't get rode much, they get this big old gut. You know, yep. that just pulls everything forward. So, you know, I run my bridge in just a single tug, but if folks get these mules that have those big guts, you know, that second tug on the bridge does a lot of good too. Go into that cinch ring.
Yeah, it just keeps that cinch out of the elbow, helps to keep it where it's supposed to be.
I have two saddles that I ride, every day. I have two rigs that I use. And one is on 7/8 rigging, and the other is a 3/4 rigging. And I guess just depending on the mule is what I put on. You know, if I get something with bigger shoulders, well, I don't know if you see my big mule Riata, the big red mule mm-hmm. I got. You know, Riata, well, she's got those giant mule. Shoulders.
Yep.
And so the 3/4 rigging fits her much better. The way that sits that cinch back and the way that saddle sits on her back is better than my 7/8, you know. And it doesn't sound like a lot going from 7/8 to 3/4, but it makes a difference on some of those mules.
Yep. It's about a full inch is between them.
Yep.
Sometimes toward an inch and a half.
I could do a whole podcast on saddle fit. Maybe we'll come back and I'll talk to you about saddle fit, because that's such a big old subject. There's so many variables to good saddle fit.
There is. But, you know, today they make amazing pads.
Yep.
That can take some of the play out of that. I still pad tight. I when we were down riding Bryce Canyon last week, I noticed a couple of these guys had them really thick foam pads. And I'm still riding a hospital fleece under a Navajo blanket, yep. like I've done for my whole life. And I don't sore anything up.
Yep. The biggest pad I'll go, I like 3/4. 5-star pads are my favorite.
Yeah.
3/4, that's as big as I'll go. But because the bigger your pad, the bigger you go on the pad, that's the less contact your saddle has. And the worse your fit is going to be.
That's correct.
Because you already have one pad right there on that.
Exactly.
That fleece is one pad right there.
Yep. That pad.
So how thick is that? How thick is that fleece on there?
Well, it's
because it's going to smash down.
It's 3/4 is what we. Yeah. And we've never built a saddle ever that has fake fleece on it.
Yep.
We only use sheep's wool.
Right.
That's just. Just the way it is. I know there's other things out there available, but it's not going to happen here. So.
Well, there's a lot of stuff with saddle making that, you know, I'm all for trying new things. You know,
yep.
just like we talked earlier, if somebody's got a better way of doing something, I'm going to pay attention to it.
Absolutely.
But there's some of these things that have been around for thousands of years and that just are hard to beat.
They are.
Some of these traditions, some of the ways, I mean, some of the ways you process this leather, and that could be a whole different show too, but well, thanks for sharing your thoughts on the saddles and stuff. Before I say, I want to get to your, we got a good poem here to share with you guys, and I want to have Jim give us some advice, but is there any other stories, any other, you got piles of them, any other funny stories maybe you'd want to share?
Oh, I don't know.
Anything
I...
on top of your head there?
Can't think of any. If we do this again, I'll share you that one about the dogs getting under the mules.
Okay. Yeah, we'll find that.
Yeah, that was a pretty good wreck that day. I actually broke the bit in half when he started lunging. I just got to stay on. I just kept a hold of the reins.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that was a pretty good show. But this little poem that I wrote about my buddy that said he didn't want to have a mule, and we finally talked him in. We sold him a colt, a yearling, Molly, years ago. And this story's true. What happened with this is the inspiration for this poem. And most of the poems I write are based on my personal experiences. Not all of them, but most of them. And so I've seen this firsthand, and what he did with that horse at the end is actually true too. So
So we got a good poem here. Let's hear it.
we'll give you this. This is about a friend of mine's mule conversion. His name's Heber Hyde. He's a good friend of our
This
families.
guy grew up right next door.
Yep, or we lived by him for a lot of years, and he had some good horses, and he was a good hand with the rope. I think he's doing senior team roping now, and lives out where there's a lot of people that team rope and ranch rope, and he's actually gravitated away now from mules. So, but we had him in our pocket there for about 20 years with a lot of good packing with mules. And I see that now, he's retired and has time to rope and enjoying that, and a good rope horse, I guess, fits him a little better right now at this point in his life. But when he converted with mules, this is his story, mule conversion. Heber said he hated anything mule. He used horses as a hard, fast rule, like the rope horse his line back done, or his little blue roan he rode just for fun, or Pearl or Dolly or his gelding Jake. Only horses in his string when he packed to the lake. One day, in a moment when he was feeling weak, Heber bought a mule filly. She was really pretty sweet. He took her on as a project, just to say I told you so. He trained her extra well, kind of just for show. He taught her how to side past and to back up extremely fast. She could spin on a dime and give a nickel's change. He roped steers on her in the arena and out on the range. Heber trained her to pack all of his gear. The filly was in mule school for well over a year. He trained the little Molly till she necked reins supreme. He rode her, the mule, and packed horses in his string. He found in down timber she was really tops. If the log was too high for stepping, she just made a little hop. If the trail was faint and rocky or very steep, she was mindful of all 4 feet. He never lost his seat. He hitched her to the wagon and gave all the kids a ride. The Molly become family to Heber, a source of pride. But still, he was embarrassed to be seen riding just a mule. In his heart, he really loved her. In his mind, he'd broke a rule. It caused him consternation, 'cause he truly loved the horse. But the practical inside him said, let nature take its course. He was riding a 3-year-old horse filly. She was doing pretty well. When high up in the Uintas, there was a bridge in the trail. Well, the filly balked and backed and threatened to explode. Heber just kept on coaxing and nudged her as he rode. She was finally on the deck with the river down below. Then at that moment she came undone and tried to lose her load. Over the rail they went, rider, horse, and all. The worst wasn't over. Heber broke the filly's fall. Heber landed on the bottom, busted up pretty bad, piled up in the river. It was looking mighty sad. The filly was fine, not any worse for wear. Heber lay there helpless. Life just isn't very fair. Well, Chip took Heber to the hospital, where he took some days to mend. This is where his heart took over and his mind began to bend. He got it in his head somehow that his horses were no good. He would just use mules from now on when he went out in the woods. It wasn't long till there was just long ears on his place. His conversion was complete. To his horse friends, Heber fell from grace. And what of the little filly who dumped Heber in the ditch? Well, he gave her to his mother-in-law. To Heber, it just seemed to fit.
There's always a twist at the end of Jim's poems.
Well, that's a
Always a
true
twist.
story. But anyway, you can't make it up. So that's what makes a poem, I guess, is a story that you can't make up. They tell themselves.
Jim's got a pile of poems. I've heard dozens and dozens over the years, and I really appreciate those, Jim.
Well, thanks, Ty.
So, Jim, I was just telling you when we were on the break here that, this week we've had about, what was it, 13,300 listens on this thing this week.
Well, that speaks well to who you
So,
are.
we all know, but with that many folks listening, if you could give them advice, I mean, my podcast is called Everyday Mealmanship, And it's, you know, I like to do fun interviews like this, but most of the time I'm giving mule wisdom and tips and fixing problems, and you know, that's what I usually do on this podcast. But you've been through a lot. You've shared some of the stories on here. If you could give a little advice, what would it be?
Well, I'm going to go back to that story about that Molly mule I had down in the rocks that I couldn't get her to quite be where I wanted her to be. And I'll tie this into your father-in-law in a couple of ways, and to Joe G. Joe G's a friend of, real good friend of Ty's and a real good friend of mine. And when Joe first got into mules, I started riding with him a little bit, and what I could see that he wasn't very comfortable with what was going on, and I could also see that he didn't have maybe the best of mules for him, and it looked like it could be problematic for him. And what I told him was that I would like to ride with him. And ultimately, I took him on his very first pack trip, and now he's a seasoned packer. Joe's very handy at packing, handles his pack string good, and he's just an all-around good hand now. You wouldn't know where he was when I first met him. And my advice to him was that my friend Larry's off every Friday. Get with Larry and see if you can't get, and Joe closed his clinic every Friday. I says, get with Larry and see if you can't ride with him. And Larry's the kind of guy that'll help you and your mule, and you'll get to where you want to be. And so that would be my advice, and to myself with that Molly. Now, so not just taking an individual like me, hanging around Ty or hanging around Larry, to increase my skills, but if I want that filly to gain confidence in what she can do that I know she can do, if I have somebody, a partner that I could go with, maybe get my son or go with Ty or Larry or anybody that can go through some of them obstacles, and then my mule will just follow, and that'll help build her confidence. So I think that's, you could use that as a metaphor in about anything in life, be it raising kids or whatever. You find somebody that's doing something right. Find a mule that's doing something right. Find a rider that's doing something right, and try to learn from them. And I'm gonna get one of Ty's CDs from him on training these older mules to use. I know he's got one. I've looked it up, and I think that's a good resource too. And I can't wait to view that and see if I can pick up some tips. Even as old as I am, I'm a student of mulemanship, and I'm not anywhere near where I need to be or where Ty is. You know, I've got my specialties, but there's a lot more that I want to learn and a lot more I need to learn. And I think surrounding yourself with people and surrounding yourself with mules that have ability and can teach you and your mule at the same time, a lot of times, I think that's probably the best advice I could give anybody.
That's great. Thank you, Jim. Yeah, it's those you hang around with, and you know what you're exposed to makes a big difference in the way you turn out. I mean,
Yep.
I attribute it, you know, my success and the things that I've been able to accomplish thus far in my life, and hopefully a lot more yet to come. But you know, to growing up, you know, being around you and a lot of good people and good family, and yeah, just what's that? Yeah, iron sharpens iron, right?
Yep.
So, well, Jim, it's been a pleasure having you on this podcast. And before we sign off here, I want to say thank you. And how can people connect with you? How can they contact you? What's the best way?
Well, I'm too old and stubborn to have a website. And the way I've done business forever is just word of mouth. never had a name on a truck or anything. We do have business cards, but the best way to get me is 801-830-0747. We build a lot of chinks, a lot of shaps, leggings. We've been building some step ends that really had a large success with and created quite a following with these step ends. And what I like about those is, you know, most of us have leather seats in our truck, and we can get off that mule and still have our shaps on and get in there and not have buckles barking up our seats. So anyway, that's how to catch me.
All right.
If you don't get me, leave me a message or shoot me a text.
And you're on the Facebook too, aren't you?
Yeah, I do Facebook, and it's under Jimmy. My granddaughter set that up, but I'm actually going to move over to Parler. We're going to go over there, and I hope to have it as Jim Saddleman, but we'll see if that pans out. I haven't got worked through it yet, but
okay. We'll see what we can do there, huh?
Yep.
Well, thank you, Jim. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ty. Thanks for coming over to the shop. Appreciate it. It's good to see you, as always.
Yes, sir. Well, you guys, thanks for tuning in today. If I could ask you one favor, I would really appreciate it if you would go to, specifically on Apple Podcasts, if you would give me a 5-star review and leave some comments. Tell me what you think of this episode today, and I'd really appreciate that. So thank you very much. God bless y'all, and we'll see you next time.